Why do you insist on doing your own stunts?
I don't do stunts.
They said you did all these stunts in this movie.
Well, they lie to you, my dear. I do running, jumping, falling down, hitting people, being hit. That's the kind of stuff I do. Physical acting, because I think there's opportunity for characterization in those moments. But when it gets to be a stunt, a stuntman does it.
So was that you running trains. In front of the train?
Yeah, I was running. But there was no train behind me. There is still some magic to be had in the movies.
But you were also standing on, you were kind of on the edge of the dancing. You were harnessed in, though, or not?
Yeah, there was a cable running down my leg. It was tied off to something.
But at that moment when you were, you know, it was very believable that you were frightened. How frightening was it to stand over there and look?
The frightening part was shot on a stage. I mean, the moments when you are able to see the fear on my face, that scene was shot on a sound stage, because there's no way to get the camera around out in space in front of me. So
that's what acting
is. That's acting.
the producer said that you'd had a lot of input on this, and he was almost like his partner, and that he liked it very much, and he said that in another life he might even be a director. Can you tell us a little bit about the input and some of the things that you did on this show?
The film is a collaborative enterprise. It seems natural to me that from the point of view of my character, I would have something to say about those areas that directly affect my character: art direction, the house that I live in, costuming, makeup, things like that, are very much an expression of my character. And I like to have everybody organized around the same idea. So I may suggest that this is not appropriate as a house for Dr. Kimball, that this kind of a house might more properly express his character. But this is a natural process, an organic process in filmmaking. It happens that ideas come from all directions when you're making a movie. It's up to the director to take those ideas that seem appropriate to him.
But there are actors who do go back to their trailers and just worry about the next line of script or making calls to their agent and not getting as involved in the collaborative process as you do.
It's an instinct for self-preservation that leads me to this, and also a pleasure in working with ideas. If I can convince somebody that I'm right about something, then we'll do it that way. But if I fail to convince, then we're likely to do it in another way. It's the quality of the idea, and the idea must be tested by convincing other people.
You did some research about medicine. You went into surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that experience?
You keep wrinkling your nose when you talk about it. It's so disgusting. It's actually something that I'm fascinated by. I have witnessed operations before, mine and others. And any opportunity I can have to get into the operating room, I enjoy.
You mean you were fascinated during your own operation instead of scared?
Well, I mean, I wasn't scared when they were operating on my knee, but I've watched other procedures on me. I was awake during my back operation. I was awake during my knee operation. It's fun. Might as well, you're paying for it, you might as well find out what's going on.
What did you learn that you then used in the character of Dr. King?
I was able to absorb the atmosphere of the operating room. I don't go with a specific ambition to learn this, that, or the other thing. It's just a question of being there and absorbing the atmosphere and filing this experience away in the back of my head, and then it helps fuel me.
The dull question, why Kimball? A lot of people saw Janssen on TV, their image of him. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, this is 2-3 decades later, but it's a big screen. But why did he jump out at you and say, yeah, I have to do him?
Well, I had an emotional reaction to his dilemma to the circumstances that he found himself in, and emotion is something that I'm a big sucker for. I feel if I'm moved by something, that I then have the tools necessary to communicate that emotion to the audience. And if I don't feel that, then I don't know where to go. I don't know how to act.
Do you go back to the TV thing at all, or say no, this is a film?
No, I've never seen a whole episode of the Fugitive. I think character comes in my the way my process works. Character comes out of story. I create a character out of those things that I hope will help tell the story. And this is a different story than the Fugitive of old. A different story in a different time context. And so the character is naturally enough, to some extent or another, different.
Could you explain about the Chicago doctor that you met and you went to his house?
Well, we... I had grown a beard because the period of time between his escape and the end of the film is only about 3 weeks, and I figured we have to deal with the dramatic obligation to disguise yourself. And there was a degree of resistance on the part of Warner Brothers to me covering up the face they'd paid for. And so I was in the process of convincing my fellow filmmakers that this was the right way of going, when one night we were at a restaurant in Chicago, a little girl was playing by our table, and the maitre d' came over to corral her, and I said, "Is this your little girl?" He said, "No, no. She belongs to the doctor from Northwestern, the surgeon who's sitting around the corner." And Andy, in a fit of enthusiasm, said, "Invite the guy over to the table to have a drink. We're making a movie about a doctor." And the guy came around the corner to get his free drink, and it turned out that he and his wife were long-lost friends of Andy's assistant, who was with us that night. And she had not seen them for so long that she didn't know the child. So they sat down, and we began to talk. And this guy, by the way, had a beard very similar to mine. He's a doctor. He's got a beard. I'm on my way here to a convincing proof of my position. And I started to talk to the guy about the character as I saw him. And I mentioned that I wanted to have an art collection. I wanted to be the kind of doctor that collected art, but I didn't want to have the usual things on the wall. I didn't want the art to be about the degree of his success. I didn't want them to be stelas or things that you might recognize. I wanted it to be an idiosyncratic kind of personal thing. I wanted to distinguish him and make some... I created the impression through a couple of things, the beard, the flowered vest, the art, that he was a bit outside of the establishment. He was a bit idiosyncratic. And this doctor, who we met by luck, turned out to own an art gallery and to specialize in Middle Eastern contemporary painting, or Middle European contemporary painting, which is not widely collected. And so this guy was perfect as a model for my character. Not only that, but the house that he took us to show his art collection and to invite us for a drink was exactly appropriate to the character that I was playing and to the circumstances of the murder. And so we got the art director to go over and sketch his house, and his house became my house in the movie, and his art collection became my art collection in the film. I didn't get to keep the beard. No.
When you go back to Wyoming, the rumor is that you live a life that's very antithetical to the kind of fame and Hollywood lifestyle that we expect from movie stars of your magnitude. Is that deliberate? Is it a kind of a way to escape all that surrounds that?
No, it's just a family home. It's a place for us to to live. I don't think of it as as anti anything. I mean, it's where we live. We love living there. We've been there for about 12 years, and it's not a revulsion to the things that go on in Hollywood. I am very much a part of what we think of as Hollywood. It's just that it's a nicer place to live. When I look out my window in the morning, there are elk grazing in the meadow and there are eagles flying overhead. And the kids can run outside without danger of getting run over or running into bad guys. It's just it's a nicer place to live.
You have cattle and horses there too?
I have horses, but no cattle. We slung them off a couple of years ago. And now the wildlife has come back because the grass is not all eaten up by.
So do they treat you in town?
Cows. Like they're used to me now, you know. They're well used to me. We are members of the community. We're well knit into the community. And I think I'll always, you know, be a little strange because of what I do. But I think I think the people in town are agreeable to letting us try and live a normal life there.
Speaking of homes, what was it like to go back to Chicago and try to fit into the St. Patrick's Day parade?
Well, it was fun to go back to Chicago. I hadn't been back there in 25 or 30 years, and I have a few friends there. It was interesting to see the places where I lived when I was growing up. They are all much smaller than they than they used to be when I was a kid. Chicago is a great and vital background for the story here. It has lots of levels, Chicago. It has that exciting, glitzy, sophisticated architecture, and that is the world of Kimball before his fall. And then it has the neighborhoods, gritty, kind of really funky neighborhoods, and that's where he ends up. So it's a dramatic complement to the action of the film.
And being in the parade, was that?
Being in the parade was a pain in the butt, I mean, because we had to work around people who were saying, "Hey man, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm trying to make a living." We it was, you know, you can't blame them, but we had enough. Finally, just to cut together those few moments.
Right? Throughout your career, you've had a wonderful roles. Will you ever go back to playing Indiana Jones again?
There's some hope that we'll be able to put together a story that we all can feel has enough ambition to do it again. We're sort of noodling around a couple ideas.
So you really haven't hung up the brown fedora forever then? You said that a couple of times.
Oh, I've lied to you before. Get used to it. No, it never occurred to me that it might work again, you know? And then, and so I really sincerely did think that was the end. And then George had this idea, and we'll see.
What about the idea of directing? Everybody said that you might make a very good director if you ever thought about it again. You just said that you've lied before.
No, but I really do think it's too hard. I've got this terrific job. I go make a movie. I enormously well paid, and I get to go away, and I have some time left over. A director who develops a project, sees it through the shooting process, still has months to go on the film, and I'm home already. And I really don't want to devote that much of my life to my job. I want to have another part of my life. I fear I wouldn't be able to do that if I began to direct.
Arnold Copelson described you as expensive and difficult to find, and that he needed the clout of Warner Brothers before he could get to you, and yet he said that he found out you were already interested in the story. What about that as kind of a model for how Hollywood works?
I don't quite understand the story. I'd seen the script two times before. It had been sent to me by Warner Brothers, and I assumed by Arnold. And it had never come up to snuff. I never thought it was sort of, you know, great. And then all of a sudden it showed up again, and I thought it was great. I thought, you know, there, still the film was in process, the script was in process all the way through the shooting period, and we didn't have a final draft of the script until we were finished shooting. There was enough there to attract me. There was enough there to give me an emotional reaction to the material. And it had still not, we didn't have the medical mystery story, the overlay of the drug protocol, which we then invented after I signed on and added to it, which I think it gave it more scope. So there was a lot of process left to go. I don't understand being too expensive and not being available. I don't know what that means. We'll ask Arnold.
did you feel at all like the Energizer Rabbit during this movie? Because you just seemed to go through everything.
I forget about that. I mean, I'm struggling with the script problems, with the overall thing. And until I started talking to you folks, I didn't think of it as that physical a movie. Even when I look at it, I'm sort of stuck in the head of Kimball. I don't feel it physically the way I think you do. But it is, it does, I did it 5 minutes at a time, you know. You put it all together without interruption, it does seem really arduous.
What was it like in the sewers? How did you shoot those scenes?
It was all built on stage. Those were all, that whole network of tunnels and sewers was built on stage.
So it wasn't smelly?
No.
But you did have to
swim. We were smelly after a while, but it wasn't.
You did have to swim in that icy water, and it was so cold that there was fear of you getting hypothermia. Can you tell us about that? You went in and out of a hot tub, is that true?
Yeah, there was a tub of hot water behind the camera. To jump into when I got out of the water. It wasn't so bad.
It wasn't so crazy.
Is there a moment when you feel you have a lock on a character like this, or are you always not sure throughout the whole process?
Well, I mean, you're sure and you're not sure. You know that you never are going to achieve the degree of success without any given moment that you really want, because there's not enough time, there's not enough money. You just have to move as quick as you can with a big thing like this. And I don't expect to be satisfied. In fact, I'm never really satisfied with it. And it's not my expectation to be satisfied. I just want to come as close to the mark as reasonable behavior will allow.
Is there a role that you've... I've enjoyed the last couple of Vanity Fair articles about you. And they seem to kind of note how when you're out in public, you're not who people imagine you would look in person after having seen you on screen. And I was wondering if you were able to bring some of that inobtrusive body language from your experience on the street.
No, it really did help. It really did help. I knew what to do, not to be recognized. It's real simple, actually. You just put your head down and go about your business, and you don't go when you come into a room. I mean, people really, it's circumstantial. You behave like a movie star, people begin to take notice of you. You behave like an ordinary schlump, and they begin to think you're an ordinary schlump.
Do you ever find it difficult behaving not like a movie star?
No.
When people make it so easy?
No, I mean, being a movie star has only one reasonable place, and that's on the movie set, where the fact that you're a movie star means you can have some influence and control over your own destiny and the product that you make. That's a reasonable use of that power. It has no value outside of that world except to get you a dentist appointment or get you a table reservation, and that's dirty work I don't do myself.
You mentioned satisfaction. You used the word satisfaction a moment ago. Where does the satisfaction come for you? Do you watch your films with an audience, for instance? Do you get a sense?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I do see. First of all, the work process is satisfying to me, even though it doesn't. There's not an ultimate satisfaction. I'm never quite happy with the product. nonetheless, I take pleasure in the exercise of craft. I like the decision-making process, which is a part of filmmaking. I like working with actors. I like working with a director. I like working with the camera crew. I have as much fun working with the dolly grip as I do with the director, because he's the one who has to be in emotional sync with me, so that when I move, he moves. When I stop, he stops. It's really a community kind of feeling and a team effort. I do enjoy seeing a film with the audience, but I am interested in a movie up till the time it's finished, and then I don't think I've ever seen one of my films all the way through that after the final cut. I love to see. I do like to see a movie with an audience, and gives me pleasure that when they are involved in it.
Is there one character, as you say, you're not completely satisfied with the character? One character that you have played where you felt this is the closest I've ever come to perfection, or?
No, it's just there. I mean, there are moments in each movie where I think that's a good moment. That was okay. That was better than okay. But I can't say that one film pleases me more than another.
Is that what keeps you going in acting to try to achieve that, or is that impossible?
I don't think it's possible to attain it. I think it's an idea you carry around in your head of what perfection is, and then nobody ever reaches it. But it's important that the idea is there, because it makes you work hard. It makes you want to work hard.
What was the most difficult role or scene for you in this particular movie, both cerebrally and also physically?
I honestly can't answer you. I don't know. I can't remember any one thing being more difficult than another.
Can you describe just one that was a Lulu?
One that was a Lulu?
Yeah. It seemed to be like it was just one thing after another.
It's a journalistic
thing.
Yeah. Gee whiz. I'd really like to help here, but I just can't think of anything.
You know, Arnold Copelson said you fell down the stairs and were screaming in agony. I mean, you sort of made it sound like, well, yeah, I fell down and gee, I really ripped this thing again.
Well, it hurt for a few minutes, yeah.
But you just kept going after that. He said you didn't
fall for ice.
Well, I was, I wasn't screaming in general. I was saying, get me some ice.
No, he said in agony. He's screaming in agony.
It hurt for a few minutes, and then when I was able to ice it down, and I was able to do a couple more shots.
Was that limp then a part of what had seriously?
Yeah.
No, seriously.
It's a.
Because I thought it was great that he was injured in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great that he didn't just suddenly become Superman.
No, it's when I look at the movie, I see a variety of limps, that some of which shouldn't be there.
Talking about Superman, though, and actually when Jack Ryan came up, I thought it was an interesting contrast. Richard Kimball is much more of an everyman than many of the characters that you've played.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he keeps having escapes, he's something that people can more identify with.
Yeah.
Is that part of the appeal? Well,
it's part of the ambition, is to keep the scale of his dramatics within the range of possibility. It can be great fun for us to see something, in an Indiana Jones movie, which, were it to occur in this film, would take us completely out of the story. So you have to believe, or almost believe, that these things could happen.
But Kimball comes real close with the jumping off the dam.
That's what I said. We're coming dangerously close to the limits of believability. But I think that seeing it in context of the film, I think it works. And I think it's the opportunity there to create drama depends on the, you know, the degree of risk that he will, that he's willing to take compared to going back to jail.
What's happening to Wilder and Hickok?
Pardon me?
What's happening to Wilder and Hickok?
Hickok and Cody is going through yet another script, and we'll see when it's finished.
So you're still interested if the script is, or have you started to turn back and look elsewhere?
No, it's something that's been around for a while, and it never quite made it, and maybe it will next time. If it does, I will be interested.
Just a quick question about bringing up the topic of the everyman versus the superman. I think one of the most appealing aspects that you bring to roles is a vulnerability, a fear when fear is appropriate. There's no real stoicism even when your characters are doing extraordinary things. Is that something that you feel you were able to cultivate, and how important is that, do you think, to your appeal as a character that members of the audience can relate to?
Well, I mean, one thing you always want to do is to keep your audience enough in mind so that they can be available to feel what you're feeling. If you can cause this, you know, emotional continuity between you and the audience to obtain, then you know you use your best efforts to keep it once you've gained it. I don't think of myself as being different to the people in the audience. I have the same emotions that they do. I respond to the same things they do. I am their designated driver on the screen. And I think it's has more to do with the choice of roles than it has to do with anything particular about me. I think in all cases, the audience makes their mind up about an actor depending on the experience that they've had with him as an actor. And so they are not seeing me whole cloth. They're seeing a little bit of me here, a little bit of me there. And really, their favorable impression of me has to do with the quality of the entertainment that I, as a member of a team of people, have brought them.